as Mark said, he will take some questions. Just a reminder again, if you could keep your comments brief so we can get more people through.
Hi, I'm actually an endocrinologist, so your comments about fertility are very interesting because I see that in practice. It's become a multi-billion dollar industry.
Right.
For women now to have children, because it actually is a problem for men as well. So it's actually something that we probably should include in mm-hmm. the curriculums of younger kids even. My question was two things about example. We recently had the wedding of our future king and queen. And it was a state service in front of the church with a wonderful sermon by the Bishop of London. Do you think that will have any influence? Hopefully they'll stay married.
I'm not going to speculate on whether they'll stay married. I heard... You know, I have written in favor of the idea of younger marriage, and by which I do not mean teenage marriage. It's likely that marriage will survive. I mean, in part because this is a couple that didn't just meet a year before or two, like Diana and Charles, but it sounds like they've known each other for a very long time. I heard pieces of that sermon. I heard it was very good, etc. I'm just not optimistic that such cultural... I'm happy about it, but I don't think in the long run that people watching it will sort of suddenly reacquire an older appreciation for marriage. But I was very glad to hear it. So, but back about the endocrinology thing, and before our third child, we had some difficulty getting pregnant, and one of the nurses made this flippant comment that, yeah, you know, you spend your 20s trying to avoid getting pregnant, and then you spend your 30s trying to get pregnant. Isn't that ironic? That wasn't quite the case with us, but it is an interesting anecdote.
Very interested in your comment about intergenerational relations will suffer, you say. And I'm going to personalize it a little bit because it maybe helps to ask my question. So over 40 years of marriage, 4 adult children, the eldest married with first grandchild, and 3 not married, all in your age groups. Mm-hmm. Or even getting to the far end of it, and us other generation worrying.
Right.
Worrying.
It's
our thinking, my wife's and my thinking is that it has something to do with the loss of the sense of the sacrament of marriage. A little bit, the same question just asked in a way,
right.
Is that we talk about how much work it was, our over 40 years, and how much, that was satisfying. I wouldn't say enjoyable, satisfying.
Right. Right.
And that we say, how can we possibly help my daughter, who is living with a guy who we think is terrific, and we tell them that they ought to get married, how do we communicate to them the sacrament of marriage and the wonders of marriage, and how we can't support them till they are married? Because it's inappropriate as us,
yeah,
as our daughter's parents, to support our daughter and normalize the lack of marriage in the equation.
Right.
Yet they're insistent on continuing.
Right.
A little bit of a long question,
sure,
but I think you see at the heart,
yeah,
and I didn't see you answering that key question, and maybe it's because it's become irrelevant in
Which
our rampant
question?
Individualism,
sure,
that it's no I longer can. Important for my generation to say to the next generation that marriage is important. They've got to come to that decision themselves.
A lot of stuff in there, and I'll try to briefly get to it. It sounds like you are and your wife are marriage naturalists, like many people of a couple generations ago. It's just what you did when you were in love, and didn't really matter what age that was, and that was this next step. And somehow we gave birth to all these marriage planners, and we didn't even, I mean, we didn't teach them that necessarily, but they certainly caught it from the world around them. Yeah, I do think the sacramental language around marriage is I find it very helpful, but it is a foreign language to plenty of people. And I want to pump back a little bit to this economic stuff I talked about, the low price of sex. The price of sex has diminished over time for lots of reasons, one of which, you know, certainly has, you know, is the advent of the pill. Not just the advent of it in 1960, but its slow uptake over the past 50 years, such to we get to a point where young men and women really don't know why they ought to marry, because they can mimic all aspects of marriage without really having to do that last thing, right? And I tend to think, you know, women like the idea of marriage and would prefer it more than men. But men don't have to be compelled. I mean, what compels men to marry, right? I mean, the sexual aspect of a relationship is always a little bit probably more focused in his head than in hers. And he gets access to this thing. And so now we're faced with all, you know, cohabiting couples, and you would like to them for them to get married. But what is it that, I mean, you try your best to haul out any sort of arguments, but really cohabitation, thanks to reproductive technology, just mimics marriage in all ways except this sacramental union. And so,
my only tactic then is to withdraw support.
That is certainly a tactic that you can do. Right, you don't wish to do it. Although, the thing is, I always think some people, everything used to channel people to get married. And so if those channels are not there anymore, how are we going to accomplish this, right? I mean, and so you have authority to some degree and some power as a father in the ways you mentioned.
You mentioned in your prospects of the future that the percentage of stay-at-home dads will peak. I'd be curious to see why you think that.
It's the discourse about that has become rather popular, and I see that more of that is happening. I just don't think men, on average, feel like doing that. You'll see data for that rising, but what that will be about mostly is sort of, this is not a guy who's like, I am going to stay at home and that's what I'm going to do and she's going to work. It's typically the case is he's between jobs or he's underemployed and she's employed full time. So the stay-at-home dad is more like a, you know, I'm home now for a while and this is what I'm doing for a while. It's not the sort of, you know, mentality that people are thinking of it as. I just think there's a ceiling to it because I think the average man is just uninterested in it. Not everybody, but average.
A few of us would disagree, but thank you.
I'm also not implying that it's a bad idea. I just think that it's never going to be a popular idea.
Good morning. I'm a consultant pediatrician in town and also a mom of two young children. So I read a lot of parenting theory, both professionally and personally. And so there's a term that I found that you're kind of missing in your presentation. Maybe it's in the book. But when you look at your cultural stories about delay of marriage being because you have to become your own person and then also linked with parental resistance, and then maybe that graph that shows the jump in between 1970 and 99, you don't talk about the helicopter parent phenomenon, right?
Right.
And so the product of people of, you know, in their 20s, maybe early 30s, would be, like, it's all related, you know, delaying fertility in marriage from the 70s and 80s may have produced sort of children that are attached still by the umbilical cord. Mm-hmm. And so it actually fits very nicely to say, sure, they haven't been told or equipped to be their own person, so why should they get married? And that's and then the extension of that parent is still a helicopter because they want them to become financially independent, but there's no impetus to become financially independent. Right. So do you mention helicopter parenting?
I don't mention helicopter parenting because largely I don't get into parenting studies, but I think that makes a good deal of sense. Some of that is connected to diminished fertility as well. I mean, on average, you know, if you have 4 to 6 children or something, you just can't hover over them all, right? If you have 1 or 2, you can be a much better hoverer. I have 3, which leads me to, like, do I hover, do I just give up, right? Because it's a lot of work to hover, right? And so, and you want to protect your children, and there's this perception that the world is more dangerous than it probably actually is.
It's self-perpetuating as well, and it's going to get worse, right? Because if you delay marriage, to delay fertility to have 1 or 2 children, then those 1 or 2 children are so precious, not that all children are, is that then you'll never let go of them. And so anyway, I think that piece, the parenting part, probably has to reverse a bit to see any change in the stats.
Yeah, I would agree. Thanks.
You have some visit tables there at the beginning of your presentation, and one of them shows that, if I read it right, one of them shows that the number percentage of men who remain unmarried at age 40 has quadrupled between 1970 and 2010. But the percentage of women who remain unmarried in the same time period only doubled.
Only doubled.
So my question is, why is that?
Sure.
Number two, if the women still marry at twice the rate of men, who do they marry?
Women are not marrying at twice the rate of men. Okay. So what you're seeing is not it's a marriage rate. It's a share of people at a population or at an age group who are currently have never been married. So one shouldn't. If you want to flash that one up, right? It's one before that, I think.
That was before. Yeah.
That. Right there. Men are marriageable later into their life course on average than women. Okay, so you'll have some 45 to 50 year old men who marry 40 to 44 year old women. You'll have a lot more of a women here married than here. Okay, so men on average have an age gap of about 2.5 years on women, right? And I think that is going to increase over time. So one can't look at this and say double the number of women are married, or double the rate of women are married than men, because women will marry on average younger than here. So these men will be marrying these women on average, right? So, especially when you get up to age, I mean, my dearest friend married at 42 to a woman who was 31. So that's a much more common age gap between men and women at that age. So one shouldn't look parallel when one looks at a graph like that.
I was just going to ask you,
if I think we're still good. You'll shut me down, right? Okay.
Just on what you were saying, a friend of mine married at age 50 to his 48-year-old common-law wife because the kids kept asking, when are you and dad going to get married?
Yeah.
And they finally took the step. But it brings up an interesting situation where legally and intellectually, they had, since their university days, considered themselves married because they were cohabiting. And I'm wondering if your research seems to suggest that emerging adults still see marriage as a distinct phenomenon, as a step that you actually take, whatever the legal process or whatever your own intellectual response to it is, that it, you know, if you're cohabiting, you're married. Is that in fact the case?
Certainly in the United States, marriage is, I think marriage cohabitation in the United States and Canada is a comparable idea. What is different is cohabitation. I mean, we don't even use the term common law really there much, because there's this mentality like there are different types of cohabitations. We now, in the U.S., the average age of first cohabitation is the average age of first marriage 30 years ago. So people are still angling to get together in the early 20s. They used to marry, now they're not marrying, but are cohabiting. But there are different kinds of cohabitation, but sort of common law with long-term intentions to do this is less common in the U.S. than in Canada.
So it is a genuine distinction, not just kind of nominal.
I think so. Okay. About that, not so much about what marriage is and means.
Hey, everyone. All right. I'd like to take an opportunity to thank Mark. We have a little token.